Hare Krishna. Okay, time for some questions and answers. Here from Delhi is a Bikash Dhawan who writes about Shiksha and Diksha, and then says that no doubt spiritual life can't begin unless one receives Diksha, but then how come that we see that Shukadeva Goswami, Prakrit Maharaj, Narada, Srila Vyasadeva didn't receive Diksha? I don't agree with the fact that they didn't receive Diksha. It may be that we don't see, or rather, we haven't read about them receiving Diksha, but that doesn't mean that they did. Of course, as far as Lord Brahma is concerned, Brahma Samhita describes Lord Brahma's Diksha or initiation by the Lord, so there's no question over there of whether Lord Brahma received Diksha or not. But take the example of Parikshit Maharaj, and I don't remember having read in Bhagavatam or elsewhere of the event of his taking Diksha. But that doesn't mean that he didn't receive Diksha. Just like you may not read of Parikshit Maharaj as having lunch, but it's understood that he ate because it's such an everyday occurrence. So similarly, in Vedic culture, for Kshatriyas, Brahmins, and Vaishyas to receive Diksha, everyone receives Diksha. However, in the spiritual life of Parikshit Maharaj, the most noteworthy personality is Shukadeva Goswami, and he is mentioned many, many times. So just because we don't read something that's a traditionally given event, we should not assume that it didn't happen. And the same with Narada and Vyas and others who may not have been listed here. Next is Bhakti Ryan, who asks, I come from a Krishna conscious family, but my mom and dad are initiated in the Gaudiya Math, but I would like to take Shanta Iskan Guru. I would like to know if this is going to cause me a problem. No, it won't cause any problem. If it's not a problem for your mother and father, then it won't be a problem, provided that there's a clear understanding that the parampara is going to go in a somewhat different direction, which means that there may be different instructions, institutional allegiances, and so on. But otherwise, there shouldn't be any problem. I can think of many examples of devotees' parents who are initiated in ISKCON and children in Gaudiya Math and vice versa. So that's all fine and good. And good luck to Bhakti Ryan. And Madhurekshana asks a question. She says, one of my friends wants to know what's the difference between suppressing desires and controlling them. That's a good question. Generally, suppressing a desire means that you don't purify desires. When desires are properly purified, then one ultimately becomes free from them. But if they're not purified, then even if you can control them for some time, ultimately they'll come back with a vengeance. So, and there are many examples in Shastra of that. But there are different ways of controlling desires also. One way of controlling desire is to just give up the object of the desire, period, through the purificatory process, such as, for instance, sex life. If one can do without sex life altogether, then better that one stay brahmachari, take sannyas, or stay brahmacharini, and that's it. However, if one cannot give up a sex life altogether, then one should get married and in that way have controlled sex life. Children for the sake of sex life, for the purpose of bringing Krishna-conscious children into the world. So in either case, by practicing Krishna consciousness, the heart will become purified. But in one case, there's the complete abstinence, and in the other one, there's a gradual purification. How do we know which one to do? That's why we have the spiritual master in Vaishnavas. Knowing our natures, they give us guidance as to which of these paths we should be on, which of these paths we should be following. However, one should also be clear that desires, if they become an obstruction to our devotional service, in other words, if we try to control our desire, and actually by controlling our desire, we constantly think about the objects of the senses, perhaps in this example like sex life, or whether I should get married or not get married, and therefore can't think about Krishna, then that's an artificial control and would come under the category of suppression. So good guidance from superior authorities will help us to know which activities we should perform. Restricted sense gratification and while purification of the heart, or complete abstinence. Pravritischa, nivritischa. The path of pravriti marg or nivriti marg. There's also one question that I forgot, and that was from Bikash, also, who's asking about the parampara. And he asked about that devotees are saying that one should only chant on Tulsi Japa beads when one takes initiation, and not before then. I've heard of this. It's something new. It certainly wasn't here during Srila Prabhupada's time. And since it wasn't really here during Srila Prabhupada's time, then although it may have some traditional authenticity, it's not something that needs to be practiced in Krishna consciousness movement. I haven't as yet come across any scriptural statement to that effect, although I may give it credence, but there are thousands of scriptural references as to what type of Mahamantra you should chant on your beads. Now, there's no mention of what type of beads you should use for chanting Hare Krishna, but there are certainly a lot of statements about what type of Hare Krishna you should be chanting when you're doing your rounds. In other words, that you should be chanting without offense and absorbed in Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada's emphasis, as usual, was on the devotional activity itself. And if done properly, then that supersedes all these other traditional practices. And the last question is, why is it considered an offense to pay obeisances to the deities on the altar? Desha kala patra. There's a time and a place for everything. So you pay your obeisances to the deities on the altar before you come into the altar. You pay it outside before you do arti or do their worship. Why not do it inside? If you do it inside, you run the risk of knocking things over. Any direction that you offer your obeisances, what to speak of dandavats, your feet will be pointing towards the tadiya or the paraphernalia of the Lord, if not possibly even to a deity. Being prostrate in that proximity to the deity, therefore, is not conducive. So the idea is it's not that it's an offense not to pay obeisances, but it's where we pay obeisances, and practical considerations are being given here where and when to do something. Deshakala Patra. Hare Krishna.